Persevering Pioneers. Despite the continuing uncertainty, there were always a few who found a way to share in the pioneer service. One large-hearted pioneer during that time was James Louis Riquera, a government surveyor who was baptized in 1974. Shortly after his baptism, he took up farming in order to preach the good news to those in the vicinity of his home village. His wife also studied for a while, but as time went on, she did more and more to oppose James. For example, one morning while it was still dark, James and some brothers set out to attend a district convention in Nairobi. Later, when their vehicle was stopped at a police checkpoint, the brothers noticed something strange about James' clothing. It was uncharacteristically mismatched and ill-fitting. Initially, he joked that it was because he had dressed hastily in the darkness. But when his friends pressed him for an explanation, he admitted that his wife had hidden his dress clothes to stop him from attending the convention. He had thus been forced to grab whatever clothes he could find. James' travel partners kindly gave him some of their clothes, and he arrived at the convention suitably attired. Sometimes the opposition in James' home and neighborhood was merely an inconvenience. At other times it was more intense, but it went on for years. Through it all, James endured with mildness and built a faithful record until his death in 2005. His faith is still admired by the brothers and, without a doubt, remembered by his God, Jehovah. The following is from pages 98 and 99 of the printed edition.
God blessed our spiritual harvest. Samuel Mukwaya. Born 1932. Baptized 1974. Profile. For many years, Samuel represented the organization in legal matters, and he also served as an elder and a pioneer. I will never forget what happened during a tour of the Kenya branch office in Nairobi. "What are these colored pins for?" I asked as I examined a map of Uganda. "These are places with a lot of interest," replied Robert Hart, a member of the Kenya branch committee. "When are you sending pioneers there?" I asked, pointing to a bright pin at Iganga, my hometown. "We are not sending anyone there," he said. Then, looking straight at me with a twinkle in his eye, he continued, "You are going there." I was surprised at Brother Hart's response because I was not a pioneer and I was not living in my hometown. Somehow, though, this incident stuck in my mind, and after my retirement as a civil servant, I decided to move back home and become a regular pioneer. What a joy it was to see the handful of publishers increase rapidly to become a strong congregation with their own kingdom hall. When Patrick Baligeya was assigned to Iganga as a special pioneer, he stayed with me, and we pioneered together. We also planted a field of maize to support ourselves. We started each day with an early morning discussion of the day's text, followed by a few hours of work in our maize field. At mid-morning, we went into the territory and enjoyed the ministry for the rest of the day. As our maize seedlings grew, some neighbors suggested that our preaching was causing us to neglect our maize field. We were well aware that maize needs protection against monkeys all the time the cobs are maturing. Still, we did not want to interrupt our spiritual harvest to chase monkeys. Shortly thereafter, we noticed two big dogs loitering around our field. We did not know where they came from or who owned them, but rather than chase them away, we put some food and water out each day. Naturally, while the dogs patrolled our field, the monkeys were nowhere to be seen. Then, after 4 weeks, as suddenly as the dogs had arrived, they disappeared. But not a day before our maize was out of danger. We thanked Jehovah for the bumper crop that served as food for us rather than for the monkeys. More important, how grateful we were that God had also blessed our spiritual harvest. Returning to the account.
A brother born for when there is distress. A true companion is loving all the time and is a brother that is born for when there is distress. Proverbs 17:17. The brothers in Kenya proved to be true companions during the distress and danger endured by the Ugandan witnesses in the 1970s. Traveling overseers and branch representatives needed courage to cross the border into Uganda to provide support and encouragement for their dear brothers and sisters. Political chaos erupted in 1978 when a faction of Uganda's army invaded Tanzanian territory. Tanzania's military responded by overthrowing the Ugandan government in April 1979, forcing Uganda's feared dictator, Idi Amin, to flee. Amin's hasty departure brought many changes to Uganda. With Amin, says one brother, went the ban. The Uganda Times announced, "Missionaries are free to return." Jehovah's people once again enjoyed religious freedom. "Even if they want to kill me, I will go." In the confusion that followed the change in government, Uganda was looted as much as it was liberated. A climate of anarchy resulted in thievery and untold violence. Nevertheless, the brothers in the Kenya branch immediately arranged for Gunther Reschke and Stanley Makumba to visit Uganda and begin holding circuit assemblies. 2 weeks before going on this post-war visit, recalls Gunther, "we taught a pioneer school in Meru near Mount Kenya. I remember reading in the newspaper about the many killings in Kampala, especially at night. After reading one excerpt aloud, I exclaimed, 'And this is the place we're supposed to visit next week?' But then I thought, 'Do I want to be like Jonah and run away from my assignment?' Immediately, I lost my apprehension and told myself, 'Even if they want to kill me, I will go. I will not run away like Jonah.'" The brothers went as planned, with Stanley visiting congregations in the country's interior, while Gunther served the larger towns. There was a lot to reorganize after the war, they reported. Only about 113 publishers were active in Uganda at the time. Everyone was happy to meet freely again and hold an assembly out in the open, and it was a joy to see 241 in attendance. Though the seeds of truth had been badly trampled, it was evident they could still bear fruit. The following is from pages 101 and 102 of the printed edition.
Detained but Sustained. Patrick Baligeya. Born 1955. Baptized 1983. Profile: entered full-time service shortly after his baptism. Serves in the traveling work together with his wife, Sempronia. When a new government came to power in 1979, everyone who had been connected to the former regime was invited to go into protective custody. Announcements were made that anyone not cooperating with the arrangement would be viewed as unfriendly toward the new government and would be treated as such. Because I had served as a musician in the armed forces, I had to go into detention. I was grateful that in detention I was able to read the Bible daily to keep my mind active. Besides, I was looking for the truth, and I'd like to talk with fellow inmates on Bible subjects. In the same detention facility was one of Jehovah's Witnesses, John Mundua, who was there because he had been a civil servant and belonged to the tribe that was considered to have supported the former regime. John eagerly shared the good news with me, and I readily responded. We had only 16 Watchtower magazines and the book Good News to Make You Happy, but I immediately realized that what I was learning was the truth. After I had studied the Bible for 3 months, John felt that I qualified to be a publisher. Shortly thereafter, he was cleared of all allegations and was released. My only contact with Jehovah's organization had gone. Still, I kept conducting studies with interested ones in the detention center as best I could. I was released in October 1981, and I returned to my village, where there were no witnesses. My relatives tried to pressure me into joining them in their religious practices. Jehovah, though, saw my desire to serve him, and he sustained me. I knew that I should follow Jesus' example, so I began preaching on my own, and soon I had many studies. One day, a householder brought out The Truth That Leads to Eternal Life and remarked, "What you are saying resembles what I have read in this book." The man had only a limited interest, and I was very eager to read his book as well as his stack of Watchtower magazines. So in this case, the householder agreed to place literature with me. But I had yet to find my fellow worshippers. Brother Mundua had mentioned that there were witnesses in Jinja. Thus, I resolved to find the brothers there. After spending almost an entire night in prayer, I set off early the next morning without even having breakfast. The very first man I met as I started walking was carrying a clear plastic bag. I could barely believe my eyes when I saw that he had an Awake magazine in it. I had found one of my brothers. In 1984, I was thrilled to attend the first class of the Pioneer Service School in Uganda. And who should be with me in the class? None other than my dear brother, John Mundwa. Even now, at 74 years of age, he continues to serve faithfully as a regular pioneer. Returning to the account.
Dangerous times. At Mbale, near Uganda's eastern frontier, the two visiting brothers, Gunther and Stanley, parked their car in front of their host's home for the night. During the night, they heard thieves removing parts from the vehicle. Gunther was about to shout at the burglars when he remembered that earlier in the week, thugs had shot and killed a person who had tried to stop a burglary. On second thought, Gunther concluded that the value of the car could not be compared with the value of life and decided not to intervene. When day dawned, they found that two tires and the windshield had been stolen. They reported the theft to the police, who advised, "Take the car away before the thieves come back to get more parts." As soon as they could, the brothers set off for Kampala. But without a windshield and with only a blanket to cover Gunther and a hat to protect Stanley, the wet and breezy 155-mile journey to Kampala was less than comfortable. They had replaced one of the stolen tires with a spare tire and had borrowed a leaky tire to replace the other. To add to their anxiety, they were informed that the borrowed tire had to be returned in 2 days. The brothers held their breath and hoped the tires would hold their air. To complicate the trip, Gunther and Stanley had to negotiate a stretch of forest road that was notorious for robbers. "Drive fast," their host advised, "and don't let anyone overtake you." The intrepid brothers were relieved to arrive in Kampala safely, and in record time. They had just enough time, in fact, to find someone to take the borrowed tire back to Mbale. New challenges and opportunities. In 1980, while visiting World Headquarters in Brooklyn, New York, Brother Reschke was invited to give a report to the Bethel family on developments in Uganda. Afterward, members of the governing body expressed the hope that missionaries might be sent to Uganda once again. Everyone agreed that the time was certainly ripe for more missionary activity. Larger gatherings were again possible, and by 1981 the number of publishers in Uganda had already rebounded to 175. In fact, by July of that year, Uganda was thrilled to record a new peak of 206 publishers. Sadly, though, the fighting over the past 10 years had left discarded weapons and ammunition in the hands of many unscrupulous people. Random shootings and robberies were alarmingly common. With caution, preachers of the Good News endeavored to distribute our comforting Bible literature throughout the territory, placing an average of 12.5 magazines per publisher during July. However, prudence dictated that field service, as with other activities, should be limited to daylight hours because nightfall greatly increased the risk of assault. Despite the dangers, though, the potential for growth was unmistakable. Missionaries welcomed again. Gilead graduates Jeffrey Welch and Ari Palviainen arrived in Kampala from Kenya in September 1982. From the outset, Jeff and Ari, as the two brothers became known, enjoyed gratifying results. "People at that time were hungering for spiritual things," Jeff recalls, "so the magazines with their appealing subjects virtually placed themselves." In December, Jeff and Ari were joined by Heinz and Mariana Vertholz from the Gilead Extension School in Wiesbaden, Germany. From the start, the Vertholzes were deeply impressed by the way their Ugandan brothers were able to thrive in Uganda's damaged and dangerous communities. "Many services," recalls Heinz, "such as water supply and communication, had broken down. The political situation remained tense. More than once, there was rumor of a coup, and there were many military roadblocks. Shootings and robberies were common, especially at night. When darkness fell, not one person was to be found out on the streets. Everyone remained at home, hoping and often praying that the night would pass without uninvited visitors. Heinz and Mariana were invited to stay with Sam Waiswa and his family while looking for a house to use as a missionary home. Although Sam was a professional educator, economic conditions in the country had severely limited his resources, making his family's hospitality truly remarkable. "It was difficult to find a house in a safe area," says Heinz, "so we ended up staying at Sam's home for 5 months. In that time, we got to know each other very well. Sometimes his large family had only one meal a day, but they were always happy, and the children were obedient and respectful. Because the city water supply was not functioning properly, the children had to carry home 5-gallon plastic jerry cans full of water on their heads. When we came back from the ministry, there was always fresh water for us. Of course, we learned to economize. For example, we bathed with just a few quarts of water and save the rinse water in a basin for flushing the toilets." In April 1983, some 10 years after the earlier missionaries had been compelled to leave Uganda, the 4 new missionaries found a home in a reasonably safe area. The general insecurity and the scarcity of provisions presented many challenges, but the love of the local brothers more than compensated for those inconveniences. "We always enjoyed sharing the good news with the people," explains Mariana. "They were religious, most had a Bible, and they were open to discussion. They were very easy to approach and well-mannered, and despite the economic and other hardships, they always wore a happy smile." Older ones want to do more. Many older ones, held in high regard in Ugandan culture, have responded to the good news and have used their advancing years to serve Jehovah. For example, Paulo Mukasa, a former teacher, was 89 years old when he learned the truth. Having lived through 2 world wars, colonial rule, a violent dictatorship, and other political upheavals, Paulo was eager to learn about God's kingdom. He was delighted when he found out that the Messianic King, Jesus Christ, will deliver the poor one and the afflicted one from oppression and from violence. When Paulo qualified for baptism 2 years later, the brothers wondered, "Can we really dip a person this old completely under the water?" But they need not have worried. While an anxious youthful candidate was hesitating to go into the water, 91-year-old Paulo was baptized and emerged all smiles. Although somewhat limited in his ministry, Paulo zealously shared the kingdom good news with any who would visit him until his death some years later. Lovinsa Nakaima was another one who had to deal not only with advancing age but also with poor health. Sickness left her legs so swollen that she was unable to go anywhere without assistance. Still, when the congregation was encouraged to auxiliary pioneer for 1 month during the memorial season, Lovinsa wanted to try. By taking interested people to Lovinsa's home to study the Bible, the congregation helped her to pioneer. The missionaries also taught her to write letters to people in the villages, which she could do at her own convenience. Then, on Saturdays, an elder took Lovinsa to a busy public area in Kampala, where she could sit comfortably on a low wall and witness to passers-by all day long. Happy and satisfied at the end of the month, Lovinsa said, "Now I see that I can do it and enjoy it." Not only did she auxiliary pioneer for that 1 month, but with the kind support of the congregation, she did so for 11 consecutive months.